The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
On today's show, we're talking about a long-standing union drive among peer support workers in the harm reduction field in the downtown east side. For over a year, they have been demanding the same rights as employees of the Portland Hotel Society, despite objections from that nonprofit organization that they don't have the same status as regular employees, as people with lived experience in harm reduction. Now, however, they have voted unanimously to join QP Local 1004 in a vote that was unveiled this week, despite being cast at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic and put on pause because of that and PHS's opposition. Here's Andrew Ledger. He's president of QP 1004. Andrew, thank you so much for coming back on Co-op Radio's The Pulse.
My pleasure.
Yeah, well, last time we talked was actually around the same topic about the union drive by peer support workers in the downtown east side. Can you tell me a little bit, first of all, about that drive? What kind of sparked it?
Well, I'll say, you know, having worked in the downtown east side of the PHS alongside many peer workers for many years, you know, we'd had lots of conversations with myself being a union activist around, you know, what we can do to support them. And so those conversations took place over many, many years. And we were in discussions with the PHS around trying to have them acknowledge that peer workers are workers. And that wasn't getting us to where we needed to go. So we decided to do the old fashioned thing, which is to, you know, get an organizing drive together. And we embarked on that back in the spring of last year, which culminated in a vote back on March 6th.
I think we talked about a month, maybe, or 3 weeks after that, and it had been put on kind of a freeze because of the pandemic from counting the votes.
Well, yeah, absolutely. The timing could not have been worse for us. And so we conducted the vote. The vote took place. You know, we had many peer employees participate in the vote. And then it kind of froze because the LRB kind of shut down and everything.
That's the Labor Relations Board.
Yeah. And so it was kind of on pause. And there were some objections from the PHS to the vote. They weren't in a position to accept it on its face and it raised some formal concerns and objections to the vote. And then it took us through the summer and into the fall to work through those concerns with them and eventually came to a place where they agreed that some of the peer employees were indeed employees. And that was a big hurdle. And once we got over that, we were able to go back to the board and ask them to count the votes. And so that's
what was the main concern that they expressed in recognizing these people as similar to their other employees who are unionized?
You know, I think it's the way that the PHS and I think other employers view peers as not necessarily being fulsome employees. You know, it was put to us that peers weren't employees, but they were recipients of therapeutic programs that were being operated by the PHS, which is an interesting way to view the employer-employee relationship.
So essentially they're saying that because they may have been patients in the past or people receiving services, that their official responsibilities for the organizations didn't count, even though they have responsibilities in those roles.
And even further, that the nature of the work that they did, the PHS was providing them a service in offering them employment as opposed to employing them as workers. And so that was a sort of a fundamental disconnect that we had with them and its disagreement. And we've been able to overcome that now. And they are in agreement that these peers that have been brought into QP 1004 are indeed employees. And that's great for these workers.
Can you tell us a bit about who these workers are? Like what is the role of a peer support worker in some of these organizations and which organizations do they work for?
So the ones that we've that have joined QP Local 1004 are peer supervisors and peer support workers at many of the PHS projects in the downtown east side. Things like the Insight, like the Washington Needle Depot, like some of the other injection sites that are around, and some of the opiate antagonist programs that the PHS operates. So it's a number of programs throughout the downtown east side where these sort of peer supervisors are working.
Now, last time we talked last year, last year, it's already 2021, we were talking in the wake of the killing of one of those support workers outside St. Paul's Hospital, Thomas Donaghy, and I know that had a big impact on the support community as well as the general harm reduction community.
It certainly did. I mean, it's it was heartbreaking to see that happen to someone who was just coming to work and you know was murdered on their break. That's it. It still is hard to contemplate that transpired, and that certainly happened after our organizing drive. But I think it raised concerns around health and safety for these workers, and as a union, that's a fundamental principle for us, is that we make sure workers are in a safe environment, and that's certainly front of mind for us as we continue to work for these new members.
Was Thomas involved in any way in the drive or in some of the concerns that were raised?
Thomas's employment with the PHS was more of a casual one. And so those sort of very casual peers who were just picking up shifts, they weren't part of the group that we were looking to bring into the local. It was more folks who are working in a supervisory function, folks who are, you know, given a regular schedule and receive paychecks, not the sort of stipended peers that is a more of an entry point into sort of more formal employee-employer relationship.
But all of them are paid by PHS, so this is not a volunteer position in any sense.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the stipended peer shifts, the PHS, I don't know, you'd have to ask them, but they may characterize those as volunteer shifts that you're then given a stipend for. And it really depends on which project you're working for. There are others that, you know, you go in and you work a shift and it's paid for on an hourly rate, but others are paid a stipend for the hours that they work. So there's a really wide continuum of peer employment. We thought that the easiest way to sort of get workers protected was to assert that the folks who are working very regular schedules, long-serving employees, those ones, it's clear that they are employees. And then we'll see where it goes with the rest of the peers that work for the PHS.
Could you talk a bit about why peers are so important to the harm reduction effort and kind of what contribution they make to the community and to the healthcare being provided?
Peers are vital. The entire system is built on the need for peers to be not just part of the workforce, but like a vital and like crucial part of the workforce. You know, we saw it when Insight first started, which was where a lot of the peers were working in the beginning, and also the Drug Users Resource Center back when that was up and running. You know, peers break down barriers to access. When members of the community come in and they see other members of the community working there, they know it's a place where they're going to be accepted. It takes away a lot of the stigma often associated with accessing healthcare, which is what these services provide. So that's really crucial. And we've seen over the last half decade a real explosion of peer work in and around the downtown east side, because I think many employers realize the value of having peers as an integrated part of the workforce is the way forward.
And I guess so, the definition would be people who have lived experience of the community that's being served, whatever kind of experience that is. And I know there's a broad range that would be included in that.
Yeah. I'm leery of the lived experience term, because I think it's a catch-all that's used often, but it's hard to really, it's nebulous and it's hard to really understand what it means. Mm-hmm. For me, it's people that are connected to the community in a real way, who have been part of the community and are committed to giving back to their community. That's that for me is the sort of the true definition of peers.
It's interesting because it seems like, you know, you hear these phrases like nothing about us without us, or, you know, talk about the racism in the health system as being a barrier to people accessing it, and stigma against drug users being a barrier to them accessing it. It seems like peer workers are actually kind of a glue that can help mend some of those issues, those gaps.
Yeah, they're the bond. They are. It's the only way that this that community health can be delivered in a way that's accessible, is by having peers integrated into the service delivery. So it would be, I don't believe that any of these projects would be successful without having the peer workers at the forefront of the work that's being done.
Can you talk about David Apsey? I understand he was a pretty big leader in the union drive since last March, and unfortunately passed away in April. Tell me a bit about him. Yeah. and who he was.
Yeah, so Dave was a long, long-term employee of the PHS, around 20 years of employment. And he was a leader. He was a leader at the Washington Needle Depot in relation to the service delivery, but also as a mentor and someone who supported peers as they were accessing the workplace. He was someone who was committed to harm reduction and making sure that services were available to folks who needed them. And, it was really it was pivotal in our organizing drive. He worked tirelessly to help get the peers to come out and vote in favor and be engaged in the conversation around why it was important for them to have the same, protections and benefits as the workers that they're working side by side with, and see him pass tragically in April before we could see this to fruition was really, really heartbreaking. It's still heartbreaking.
The community's lost so many people in the last year and been unable to really honor and mourn them in the way that I think people would be able to without the pandemic. So it kind of adds a layer of tragedy to all of this.
It does. There's quite a few peers who I'd worked with over the years who aren't with us anymore. And, Dave Apsey's one, and Mike Henry, who I worked with at Insight, who passed tragically a few years ago, another one. And it takes some of the joy out of this victory that they're not around to share it with us.
What was Dave like to organize with?
He was a high energy, no nonsense guy who, he took it very seriously. He approached it the way he approached his work, where he was, we're here to get a job done. We're going to get it done. We're going to do it to the best of our ability. And we're going to win. And he brought that tenacity and commitment and passion to the organizing drive. And yeah, without him, we wouldn't have been able to engage with as many people as we did. And, his credibility in the community was unquestionable. So having him as a real leader helped us all not only get people engaged, but also understand the perspective of peer workers in a way that was really important to all of us.
I guess that is a bit of a testament to how important confidence and optimism are in union drives, because it can be very discouraging.
Yeah, they certainly can be, for a group of workers who, are already marginalized, and then to be further marginalized by an employer who doesn't want to support their efforts to join the union, it's a challenge. But they, Dave and everyone else really stood up and fought for their rights. And now we've got a really positive outcome. And I'm really looking forward to working with our peers to now merge them on to the community health collective agreement.
Tell us about the vote. How many, what was the percentage of votes for joining a union among the peer workers?
It was 100% in favor.
That happens in almost no workplace that I've seen.
That's correct. No,
you'd be lucky if you get 85-90%.
Absolutely. When I was overjoyed when I opened up the email from the LRB and saw the results, that 100% of the peers that participated in the vote voted in favor. That's that sends a really clear signal to us as a union, and then hopefully to the PHS as an employer, that this group of workers feels strongly and unquestionably believes that they should be part of the union. So that's fantastic.
I mean, you mentioned Dave being there for 20 years. You've got another person, Don Cumberland at Washington Needle Depot, also 2 decades of experience. I mean, those were the very early days of, you know, the PHS fighting for insight, going to court over those things, opening up illegally when necessary to get needle exchanges. Like, these people are a backbone of the history of this neighborhood sort of saving itself.
Yeah, I couldn't say it. I couldn't say it any better. They're the reason that, you know, these different service providers like the PHS were able to be successful in getting people to want to participate in programs like Insight. Like it was because of the community led, the peers leading the community to say these places are okay, this is a safe place. Without that, none of this would have happened. Like, none of the harm reduction the way we see, I don't think would have happened without the involvement and direction from the community, which is what the peers bring.
Not to mention sort of bearers of the historians, I guess, of the Downtown East Side. I mean, these people outlasted things like the Downtown East Side Residents Association. A lot of their programs got folded into PHS, and you know, these people were there through a lot, changes of city council, changes of federal government, lawsuits. I mean, there's such a history.
Yeah, it's a history of fighting for a righteous cause, and it's a history of winning in the face of, you know, health authorities and government that didn't want to, you know, come to this. And it's not Without the leadership of the community, like, again, like, none of what we see right now in relation to service delivery, I think, would be possible.
Mm. What's next in the drive, then? You have this vote that's been unveiled at the Labor Relations Board. What is it going to take to get it certified and actually form a bargaining unit and start negotiating?
Yeah. So the next sort of mechanical steps are that it will be certified now that the vote is just a sort of a piece of bureaucracy that the Labor Relations Board will do, and then we will strike a bargaining committee like we do with every other unit. And the PHS in the last year has merged from an independent collective agreement onto the HEABC's community health collective agreement. So that transition happened for PHS employees with QP 1004, and so now it'll be an effort to merge the new organized peer workers into that provincial collective agreement and find out where they appropriately fall on the wage grid, for example, and then get them access to the benefits and entitlements that the rest of the workers that they work side by side with enjoy.
Hmm. And before we close, like, what does this actually mean for the workers, do you think, in terms of wage increases, benefits, and that kind of thing? How will this impact people on the ground?
You know, I don't want to hazard a guess in relation to wages, because that question is still to be determined. But I think what it's going to provide is things like sick time and vacation leave, extended health benefits, knowing what their rights are as workers and knowing that they have a union to support them in their work. So if things are unsafe, they know they've got a union here to back them up and help to make things safer. They'll know if they're, you know, having challenges with schedules or things like that, that they've got a large union backing them up. And that, I think, it also removes some of the unnecessary barriers that we see between, you know, someone who's hired as, say, a mental health worker for the PHS, you know, and a 20-year peer employee. I think it washes away some of those ideas that a peer worker is somehow different. And I think that that removal of some of that, those barriers is a really, really positive step, because I think there are artificial barriers to begin with. And so I like the idea of us looking at each other as workers, and whether you're a peer or you're not, doesn't really matter. We're all here working. We're all here in the Downtown East Side trying to save lives and make things more comfortable for folks. And let's acknowledge that.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Andrew. It's great to have you back on here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for your interest in the story, and happy to keep you updated as these as this finalizes over the coming months.
We look forward to that. Bye-bye.
All right.
And that was Andrew Ledger. He's president of QP Local 1004, which just organized peer support workers in Portland Hotel Society harm reduction facilities in the downtown east side.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.